Scott Mast and Chris Vogel join me this week to discuss hop production in Michigan. This is Beersmith Podcast number 260.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 260, and it's late June 2022. Scott Mast and Chris Vogel join me this week to discuss growing hops in Michigan. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Every issue of Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine is packed with articles for homebrewers and beer lovers. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent pending Brew Commander is a high quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with new Brew Commander. To reorder yours today, go to BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And the web-based version of Beersmith with a new inventory module is available now at BeersmithRecipes.com. Beersmith for the Web lets you build, edit, and brew recipes from any browser, including your desktop, your tablet, or your mobile device. The web version gives you access to tens of thousands of recipes, online recipe editing, advanced water tools, and much more. You can try Beersmith Web for 30 days by setting up an account at beersmithrecipes.com. If you purchase a Gold, Platinum, or Pro license, you get both Beersmith Web and the desktop version for one low price. Check out beersmithrecipes.com now to give Beersmith Web a try. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome Scott Mast and Chris Vogel. Scott is a Michigan-based hop farmer with 9 years in the business and owner of Hang'em High Hops, the largest producer of Michigan proprietary Great Lake hops. Chris is a Great Lake Hops employee focused on everything from propagation to commercial sales and works to bring new hops to the market. It's great to have you guys on. How are you doing, Scott? Doing well?
Doing wonderful here. Glad to be back on your show.
And Chris, how are you, sir?
Doing great. Glad to be back on the show myself. And everybody is still doing the things that we were doing a year ago, but hopefully we're doing it better.
Awesome. Well, it's great to have you both up back on the show. I think I'll start with Scott. Scott, how are things going at Hang'em High Hops?
So at Hang'em High Hops is expanding this year, which is a good sign. And so is all of our farms that we're working with. So we're putting in more acreage, just kind of a nice thing after the whole COVID scenario where we had to stall production and stall growth. We're seeing ourselves grow by about 15 to 20% increase across the board on new plantings, which is nice.
That's awesome. How many acres are you up to now?
Well, we have 30 acres total here at Hang'em High Hops, but our other businesses that we work with throughout the state, we're about 115 to 120 acres total. With, I think Chris might be able to know this because he sold the plants, but I think we increased everything around 10 to 15 acres this year on proprietaries.
Okay, is that across all of Michigan, or is that just the groups associated with Hang'em High Hops?
Just the groups associated with Hang'em High Hops.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. How's the farming going this year?
Farming is wonderful. A little bit nicer than last year. Last year we were hit with inches and inches and inches of rain every other day and 90 degrees starting all the way in May. This year we're much more steady, much more consistent, which just is a little bit easier to handle the mildew, the spraying, and the process. Put it in perspective, we spray every 5 to 7 days depending on the weather patterns. And last year we were spraying every 2 to 3. Due to
oh
the
my goodness!
So,
yeah, that sounds like a lot of work.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Well, Chris, I'd like to welcome you back as well. We had you on almost exactly a year ago. Mm-hmm. What are some of the changes going on with Michigan hop growing in general? I know you sell a lot of the proprietary hops.
Yeah, you know, there's been changes nationwide. We obviously just went through a very interesting couple of years in all industries. But, you know, in hop farming, the greatest takeaway we had is that it's apparent that our smaller farms, will not and cannot have the abilities to be completely positioned to do the hop farming concept from front to back by themselves. Mm-hmm. It really highlighted the importance of relationships, and that if you're a small farm that believes you can grow, process, produce, store, sell, and do it on your own independently, that there's just too many obstacles in the way besides just not enough hours in the day. So collaboration is super important, and it's really been highlighted this year. Many hop farms have recognized that you have to diversify your sales channels, the ability to be in different aspects of the brewing community, not just thinking about a 30-barrel brew system or a home brewer. Brewing has many different layers these days, including things like hop teas or even doing things like distilling the hops inside of different beverages, which I'm sure we'll encapsulate later. But this year, the greatest change has been small farms have recognized that survival is based upon each other and working together. You can't go it alone if you're going to be a small farm. And basically, we're all small farms outside of the Pacific Northwest.
And that's, that's part of what Great Lake Hops does, right?
That's exactly what we do. It's a long road that can only grow organically and literally grow organically in the fact that we're all just creating one relationship at a time. And then you have to put the investment back into it. And you can't get in the way of yourself by believing that we're getting into hop farming to become millionaires, because you're in hop farming for passion, for the culture, the community farming, or just living a life on a tractor for that matter. But the reality is, for many of our farms, is recognizing that this is what we do, but it's not going to be a sprint. It's a marathon.
Awesome. Well, Scott, we've been reading in the news a lot about fertilizer shortages, diesel prices going up, and other shortages. How have Michigan hop farmers been affected by the rising prices and the shortages?
Well, we're affected the same way all farms are affected. We have a little bit different tolerance. So some of the things that we had to deal with across the board is a 25 to 30% increase on just raw materials.
Wow.
So it doesn't matter what you're putting in the field, it's 25 to 30. When you're looking at fertilizers, and this is granular fertilizer, not foliar, that's up anywhere from 80 to 120%. And then when you do fuel costs, it's funny, we were just in here doing fuel costs today. We actually figured out that our fuel cost for the year spraying with our 300-gallon sprayer could actually pay for a 500-gallon sprayer over the next 2 years.
Wow.
So we purchased a 500-gallon sprayer, which means we can tackle the whole entire field in four fills rather than six or seven, and allows us to, it's kind of a wash, but we're getting better product onto the materials. It's about $15 a tank full right now to spray the field. So if you're doing four tanks, you know, it's $60. And so instead of doing six or eight tanks, so that's one of the ways that we did it. The other thing that we really had to do is watch our leaf and soil samples. So typically when you're farming, you'll get a soil sample in the spring, and they'll do like a block sampling throughout the entire field. We have four different types of soil in our field. So we did a block sampling on all types, and we actually spread specifically to the soil type. Most farmers will go through that field and say, okay, here's a one size fits all, and they'll spread. This year, we actually paid the money to do it and computerize it through. So that was a saving.
Does that help improve your yield a little bit, or how does that work?
It really doesn't. Typically, you go to the worst section, and when fertilizer was cheaper, then you could just kind of go through and spread across the board at a certain rate. This way, it does give you, you know, if the plant doesn't use it, it just goes into the soil or goes to waste. Mm-hmm. So when things are reasonably priced, you might go that route because it's just easier to spread your field at a constant rate. This time we spread it for an inconstant rate depending on soil type, which takes a little more math and a little more programming and a little more time. So that's another way that we went about it. But truthfully, the biggest thing that we're doing right now is our leaf sampling every week and our testing for what the plant is doing, and then only feeding according to that test. So every week on Friday, we get tests done, foliar tests of the entire field, the young plants versus the old plants, different soil types, and we feed exactly to what those say. So our irrigation runs about a 5 acre to 6 acre each zone. Mm-hmm. So I'm feeding each one of those zones differently in comparison to what the plant needs, because some of them might need nitrogen, some of them might, some need boron, some don't. So we're just feeding what is required. So we're trying to balance that out, but overall it's a 25 to 30% increase from standard. And what that breaks down to money-wise is every hop farmer is spending between $800 and $1,200 per acre for both chemical sprays and feedings. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at that. If we try to balance out at $1,000, we're at $1,300 for this year. We're going to add $300 per acre right off the bat, and there's no getting that back. So yeah, that's kind of what we're seeing here, and it's across the board. I think that agri-farmers or cash crop farmers are doing a little bit better because you know, the barley and the rye and the grains are all so expensive this year due to the war, that they're selling at double their normal rate. Wow. So they're doing very, very well. Even though there is an increase in the market, they're doubling their per bushel cost for sales due to the war over there.
Well, I guess that's...
So they're not as angry about it.
Right. So I guess that's a sort of the obvious follow-up question. What do you think this means for the price of hops this fall?
For us, it won't change. Really? I get that asked all the time. It can't, not during our growth period. So we're on our second year, and not even our full second year. We're about 12 months into our second, 12 months into our commercial year for the entire United States. I was trying to get that thought process out. It was a little
right,
weird, but,
right.
We're into first order, second order process right now, and we don't feel comfortable making an increase. We actually brought a decrease down and actually presented to the market bulk purchase pricing with poundages available for all the proprietary hops. Because we're in the building zone, we're not into the maintaining zone. We want to get these hops to market, get people brewing beer, and keep this moving forward. And we thought that an increase in price would not be sustainable on this currently, because it's only been in the market for 18 to 24 months, and that's just not enough time to cause that second order or third order or fourth order.
Wow. So how does that work? I mean, you're taking your inputs are 25% more, obviously, and you're charging the same price.
I am not going on vacation this summer or this winter, put it that way.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. We look at it as a, like you said, a marathon. So if we can continue to brew that second and third beer with a customer and we're down, you know, $35,000 to $40,000 increase across the board for everything, including labor and fuel and all that type of stuff, we're going to take that hit to keep that brewer brewing its fourth, fifth, sixth, and then distribution beers. That's more important to us. Hopefully the world changes, but I'm not holding my breath.
Well, I would imagine in general, though, hop prices are probably going to rise just because all the inputs are higher, right? Overall.
I mean, all the inputs are higher. We're lucky here because we have access to water. Yeah. I'm not sure. I haven't been monitoring out west this year. I know they had some drought spells. I don't know what they're doing now. Yeah. But that type of, I mean, electric hasn't gone up to follow, but all the other stuff has. Gas, propane just doubled or a little bit under doubled.
Right.
So all of our drying out here is going to, you know, double our cost there. But like I said, it's cost of doing business right now to get these hops to market, and that has been going very, very well.
Awesome. So, yeah. Well, good. Well, Chris, I had Stan Hieronymus on last week. He was talking about some of the new hop varieties coming out, and I know you have some new Michigan proprietaries coming out, as well as some of the ones you already have are trying to get into breweries. Can you talk a little bit about those varieties?
Absolutely. You know, we've talked last about where we began, you know, with Mackinac and Michigan Copper. And then we introduced to the public just in 2019, 2020, Paradigm, Emerald Spire, Gemini, and Bergamot. We were very excited to come around to 2021 and still have the opportunity to work with Scott and the farms here in Michigan to introduce Hydra. Hydra has been an amazing introduction to many brewers to the GLH collection.
I saw your t-shirt there.
Yeah, there it is.
It's got the Hydra t-shirt on.
It's a great hop and really, really fun to work with for a lot of brewers, and has created enough demand that it opens the door to the hops that we had already pre-introduced. You know, right now, this year, 2022, we are working on the marketing and introduction of Aztec, which we have in small quantity available for, you know, brewers that would like to experiment with it that has been grown here in Michigan over the last 2 years. But really right now, it's a matter of reintroducing the whole collection. You know, easily one of the most exciting hops in our whole collection is Paradigm. Mm-hmm. Paradigm absolutely is the hop we know that once the public catches on to it, once the brewers catch on to it, that's the hop.
So can you talk a little bit about the specifics of some of the varieties like Paradigm? Has it got a unique flavor profile, unique oil profile?
Well, there you go. Every one of the hops in the collection are unique to themselves and should never even be able to be compared to a hop that's already existing in the market. Mm-hmm. You know, with Paradigm, for example, it really pulls off everything from a grapes in the field to a tropical melon. Lots of really bright citrus, spice notes. It is a all-around standalone hop and also plays amazing with others. Right now, Scott can talk more to it, but we have a super diverse hop in Michigan Copper that it has these notes to it that are similar to what you would find in like fruit punch or like a high C type fruit punch, red punch. But it is so open in its oil sets that it plays well with pretty much anything. It can be used as a bittering hop. It can be used as a flavor additive hop or it's going to enhance others.
So, I mean, you're talking a lot about these tropical flavors. I'm assuming these hops have fairly high levels of like linalool and geraniol, like a lot of the Australian New Zealand hops.
Correct. And unique to it too. I'm glad you mentioned like the New Zealand hops. For example, we have a hop that's at Hang'em High that is called Emerald Spire. Mm-hmm. And that hop is very much so similar in those oil contents that do give that really nice champagne, grape, bright note. It's nothing like anything that an American 3C or the standard commodity hops are offering. Yes, oils. I know that there's one that is at Scott's Farm, Bergamot, that has been putting up oil numbers that are incredibly impressive that we think with the next couple of years will be drawing attention from the hop market worldwide because of its capability to hit that oil mark. And that's the thing we're really trying to help brewers to see is that the oil is the fingerprint of the hop. It is what's telling us what kind of aromas and flavors are really hidden in there. And it was only 5 to 10 years ago that we were more concerned about alphas and betas. And really, that's only part of the identity of the hop. That's just going to give you an idea of how you could utilize it when you're plugging in your recipe. But the oils, we're just scratching the surface because right now, as a new proprietary hop and select hop program, we have crops that are just hitting their fifth year right now. So that's generally when you start to see the oils really mature and take off. So the future's bright for the hops if we get the opportunity to get some of these brewers to revisit and play with those hops, Mackinac being another one that's just now starting to get so much more attention nationally and making sure that we're exposing those hops to everybody from the home brewer all the way to the commercial brewer that's doing distribution.
And you mentioned your two newest ones, Hydra and Aztec. Can you talk about the flavor profile for those perhaps?
Yeah, well, Hydra is just a super juiced up hop that can enhance the flavor of anything it works with, but it does have high levels of citrus that resemble anything from nectarine, tangerine, clementine. But when you pair it with other hops, it only just bolsters what it is they do. It is because it has probably the widest spectrum of oils inside of our collection. Now, the Aztec, that's got a Neo-Mexicana class heritage to it. So it has really amazing lemon tones, everything from herbal lemon to bright lemon zest, lemon peel. We even get some hints of green pepper, even jalapeno pepper, not quite the spicy note, but that that same kind of green, not so much in that vegetal world, but when you're lagering and you're making things like cold IPAs, IPLs, even shandies, you want to have that note that can come across in those Neo-Mexicana style hops. And this one's a supercharged Neo-Mex class.
Nice.
And to give a little information on those, a little more than what Chris said there. So Hydra released in 2021, did you say, Chris? So 2020, we had some varieties out there of Hydra out there just doing some test brews. That is the one that we've been gaining on. We're actually sold out of Hydra all the way up to 2024.
Wow.
So we're pre-sold out, and it's 100% because that thing does something to beer that every time you drink that beer, you get a different flavor profile as you work through the glass. It's odd. And every beer that I get now with Hydra in it, is becoming their number one tap.
That's awesome.
So yeah, we keep enough stores here to cover the homebrew stores and our website, but otherwise all commercial quantities, almost 40% higher than what we can produce right now. So I think we put in 7 more acres of Hydra this year, and I think we got 2 more to go in. Wow. So we're trying to build that one up. And this was, unfortunately, because of COVID, we were backlashed on that. So when we released this to the market, we never expected it to do this, but we only had 1,200 plants in the ground at a 3-year-old mark. And then COVID hit, and we didn't go and plant 2 more acres because we didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So now we're up just under 10 acres, and we'll be 15 to 17 next year. So we're going to cover the market just fine. It's just going to be it's a bubble. We get a lot of people pushing for that one.
That's awesome.
And then the same thing with Aztec. I presented Aztec to the market, I think second quarter, because that's grown at another one of our farms, Mr. Wizards. And they have small quantities of it the same way we did Hydra, and we're gaining planting acres of it this year to get back up to snuff. I presented that to the market with the low alpha beta and the certain oil sets that one has. And I did a full United States-wide profile of that and sent the analytics to the United States. I sold out of everything I had in probably a week and a half. But then I picked up just over a trial, a 1-pound trial over in Wyoming. They bought every stock and pile that I had left. I think they bought 220 pounds for a distribution beer. And now they're already scheduling for next year's order or this harvest season's order. Because they loved it so much after a 1-pound process trial, they did 220-pound and it's full distribution beer through, I think, 5 states.
That's awesome.
So that one, I don't know what it's going to do yet. I've only had 2 beers with it in, but everybody I sent it to, which might have been 15 breweries, a small pack from 1 to 11-pound, and then this guy who went crazy, mm-hmm. all of them have pre-ordered for next year.
That's awesome. Well, yep. Scott, my next question was actually, I know you've been working closely with breweries to get Great Lake hops to market. What have you been doing? What collaborations have you been doing over the last year, and what's the reaction been?
So we have been working hard over this last year, and once we get through harvest and we start getting back into kind of the fall, you know, we really don't see hop sales perking up the way they normally do. It's usually in December, January, February. So we spent this year really focusing on new customers. Our existing customers are phenomenal. We're kind of presenting them with what's next. If they're brewing 1 or 2 of these hops, we offer them a free brew on one of the hops they haven't tried yet, because kettle space is very, very limited. So anytime I can get into that kettle, whether it's 11 pounds, 22, 44, and they're already brewing something, I add that to the order to get that next beer in there. Mm-hmm. What ends up happening is this year, we actually did it twice already this year. We've offered, we offer up kind of a trial brew period. And so when we're working with customers, like you said, collab, right now we have a brewery in Holland, Michigan, doing a collaboration with a brewery in Virginia. And so we're finding these two breweries that are similar, both in their advertising, their marketing, and then who the people are. And we're blending those beers together and getting them communicating. And we've done that, I think, 7 times this year. And that just makes it all the more fun for advertising, interaction. And then we get to trial these beers from different companies and different locations, and they're really building really interesting recipes way above and beyond the IPA world. We've kind of went away from the full IPA this year, and we're spread in all different types of beers. Last year was just pretty much straight IPAs, and now we're blending and mixing into a full-fledged hop varieties that aren't stuck in that world of the IPA. And let me see here. I got something written down too.
That's okay.
I was trying to figure out where I was on my thing. So the other thing was shared advertising. We've been doing a ton of that. We actually hired a full-time advertise group that handles all of our Instagram, social media. And that's been a big improvement. We went from, 200 to 300 views per video. Now we're getting anywhere from 2,500 to 5,000 views per video. And it really doesn't do much for our sales, but it makes us feel good. So we do it anyway. It just gives us that.
Social media is like that, right?
It is. When people look you up and that name is there, we're a small town. We're in the middle of nowhere, and we're brewing in all 50 states and in 7 countries. That's only because of advertising and because of social media has allowed us to do that. So we definitely have fun with it. Hope we see more and more back from the customers, because I know our breweries really like it. So they send us beer samples, t-shirts, stickers. They want us to advertise their materials, which is just surprising to me. I never expected all that through the hop farming industry, that I'd be more into social media than I was any time before this.
Well, the brewing community is a great community. So I've seen that as well. I mean, like I said, I just came back from HomebrewCon, had a great experience again there. Well, Chris, you mentioned some breweries are not using your hops in quite the way you expected them. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. You know, we're always doing trials. So, as we talked in the last piece about the new hops coming out, we've got exciting new hops in line right now that are in trials, like 973XX3 or 3158.11, 373.4. We'd love to release them, but it's so important right now that we have a great portfolio and that the brewers take the opportunity to explore the hops that we already have. Mm-hmm. And that exploration, we really were encouraging to get away from just IPAs or smash brews. So right now we're seeing that because of the very unique flavor profiles that are offered because of the oil sets, a beer like a Shandy, it's Shandy season. Right now in Michigan, everybody wants a nice fruity beer that goes well with hanging out at the beach or mowing the lawn. And honestly, that's very exciting for us to see beers like Shandy's, Gose, Sours, utilize these hops. I personally am very excited about the cold IPA or the IPL, the India Pale Lager, utilizing different yeast to work with hops in a way to really expand that flavor profile to give you a beer that gets that traditional look of a lager, but yet still that new modern American IPA feel. I think our hops are absolutely built for that.
Yeah, I personally noticed in last year, just a lot of craft breweries are starting to brew lagers all of a sudden, which is interesting.
Yeah, it's a big deal for the market.
It is. And because Scott and I spend so much time with the brewers, it was about 2 years ago that lagering started to become this huge debate about bringing it back, forced lagering versus traditional. And now brewers are learning that, those lagering yeasts that are used, that's how we get into that cold IPA. So I think that to what we saw 2019, 2020, the lager was going to make a run. Now I'm really thinking that we're going to see in 23, 24, that cold IPA is going to be the next move.
Yeah. I mean, even simple ones like Pilsner are starting to really see a resurgence, I think.
Absolutely. And honestly, in the brewing community, I think the Pilsner is the greatest test of a brewer. You can't hide much in a Pilsner. So if you can brew, you can brew a good Pilsner. And I think a lot of brewers would say that's the true testament of a great brewer. It's a lot easier to hide any kind of areas of opportunity or flaws inside of a murky New England IPA than it is a very clean, crisp lager or Pilsner. But also not just nationally, but worldwide, we've got brewers that are utilizing the hops to make hop teas, hop waters. We have one distillery that's making gin out of the hops. Ciders, Houston Cider Company is doing amazing things with our hops. And I'm happy to plug them because the ciders we've gotten back from them are beyond anything we've ever had with people utilizing hops and integrating it into the cider community.
Yeah, hop cider is one of my favorites, actually. So,
agreed. And to each his own and her own. I think that we ultimately live in a world where our palates are ever changing. They change with the season. They change with the people you surround yourself with, the time of day, the time of year. So Nobody should be married to just one beer style and not be afraid to try something new. I'm guilty of walking into any brew pub and I look for the first IPA I can get. But I got to thank my wife for being the one to order all the different stuff, because then I get to still sample it and try it out. So I'd encourage anybody that loves beer and loves hoppy beers, try a hop cider any day of the week. It's probably pretty good.
Now, follow-up question, Chris, have you started making any of these other hop products like Lupulin powder and you know, Cry Hops, various other derivatives, or are you primarily just focused on selling the hops?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it, because we felt that over about 2 to 3 years ago, we saw that the health and wellness community was gravitating towards a product called xanthohumol. Mm-hmm. That's an extract that can be taken out of hops through the humulene that's inside of those oil sets that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Right now, there are sleep aids in the over-the-counter market. And if you read on the packaging, it's got hops in it. Mm-hmm. We're very excited about that we hope that our smaller growers especially can tap into utilizing their commodity hops and maybe even our proprietary hops to work inside of the health and wellness industry. As far as what we do, you know, one thing that we learned as we came into 2020 and the following couple of years is do what you do and do it well. So at Great Lakes Hops, we're just propagating and growing great plants, and we're going to stick to that.
That's cool. Well, Scott, how long have you been, I know you've been working with the breweries to get, the hop varieties into trials, and how are you pushing some of those trials now out of the pilot brewery and really into production?
So what we've been doing, this year, so we've almost doubled in size in 6 months, what took us 12 months last year. So we were picking up a new brewery every other day, in first quarter, and second quarter, we're picking up a new brewery every day. So we're completely ecstatic with what that means.
Wow.
To gain 100 new breweries in less than 6 months, both in trials, consistent beers, and a lot of these guys are now getting information to the point where we're getting phone calls saying, hey, I got three breweries over here using bergamot. I've drank the beer, I like it, and they don't go through the trial period. And the trial period for most breweries, and it's funny, we rate the breweries as a 1, 2, and 3. So the number one is a large system. Number ones typically have the smallest pilot system you can find, and they might get a pound or a couple ounces to do a trial.
Okay.
The number twos, which are, you know, typically they're that mid-level between a 10 barrel or 15 barrel.
15 maybe barrels, yeah.
Yeah, they're a little bit smaller, but they're more consistent. They still have a pilot system to where they'll do 11 pounds or 22 pounds because they got a 3 barrel sitting somewhere or a 5 barrel sitting somewhere. They have something there they want to play with.
Right.
The number threes, which are 5 barrels or less, no distribution, they buy 22 pounds or 11 pounds, depending on what beer design they have, and they just run it. But what we're seeing now, just recently, in the last 4 months, we're seeing number ones purchasing 176, 440 pounds, and putting a distribution beer in prior to trials because of the information that's coming into the market, the beers that are coming out, and then the advertising. That is something that we did not expect. So how we kind of monitor that advertising in that trial, we offer 3 times a year and maybe 4 times a year, depending. We'll take product, and usually it's 20% of the yield. So this year we had, that's not sold, I should say. This year we had 600 or 700 pounds of bergamot that we sent to the market for trial beers. And okay. We had no limitation on the quantity that they could have. So some people brewed with a 1 pound, some brewed with 176 pounds for one beer. Uh-huh. And then we took 1,000 pounds of Emerald Spire and 1,000 pounds of Paradigm. And over the last 6 weeks, we released it to the market as a trial brew in exchange for advertising. And we ended up picking up 47 breweries around the United States that are all trialing Emerald Spire and Paradigm. Some of them have already released. Some of them are in the middle release, and some will release here in the next 3 weeks.
Wow.
So out of that 45 breweries, I think we brewed 76 beers out of those 45. Some are doing 2 at one time.
Yeah.
But big names, too. A lot of stuff is coming through and then getting distributed all the way back here to Michigan from Washington and, you know, from out east. We just picked up another one down south that's doing trial beers for distribution, Canberras and Lord Hobo, 12% Beer Project. All these places, we never expected to be in there at a distribution state on the first brew. So that's been wonderful. And it's relatively easy. And we do have a little bit left over that we'll keep open. And I don't know when this is releasing. But if you call in and you want to do a trial beer with us and you say, hey, you know, I listen to the beer podcast, Brad Smith, and you want to do a trial beer with us, just bring up the podcast and we'll get you into Emerald Spire Paradigm for a trial beer. And that's an open quantity amount within reason. I always put that in there. I think we have about 450 pounds left of both varieties out of the 2,000 pounds that we had set aside for it. So we're still pushing that. And then overall, with that advertising, the breweries and whatnot, I think we've done a little over 320 new beers since January 1st, which is just amazing. I can't get them back fast enough. So along with that, we still offer the buyback program, which everyone seems to love. We wait till this has hit the tap room. We see, you know, how's it doing on tap? How are you guys liking it? And then we buy back beer and ship it back on our dime back here to the shop, as long as the state allows it. And then we do trials here with several breweries. Usually every Friday afternoon, we'll have several breweries come in, or we'll go to a brewery and we'll try beers from around the United States. And people seem to like that, you know. And then the thing that we've been putting in all our email traffic now is the 100% guarantee. I guarantee our hops are 100% fresh, and they're picked at the peak of freshness, because all of our yards are set up to pick at peak. Mm-hmm. None of them are picking early or picking late. So our stuff is number one, 100% processed and out. And if you have a bad beer or bad experience with us, I make it right 100%, whether it's another brew or we exchange for something else. We just don't allow a bad beer to come through with our hops. And then we do a lot of work with the breweries now, which is something I didn't expect either. We have five brewers on quick phone call. And then we take a brewer that's struggling with a recipe, or maybe he's excited about a recipe, wants to share it. We bring other breweries in to kind of discuss it. Because there is some weird things with these hops that sometimes you haven't seen before and some of the brewers haven't seen. And there's not a lot of recipes out there. They're gaining, but it's a small quantity. So we give them recipes to follow. We give them information to follow. And then if they're still struggling or they still have questions, and I'm not saying it happens all the time, but it's probably 10% might say, hey, you know, how long do I leave this in? You know, where do I put this in on the whirlpool? What's the temperature? This, all these questions I had no clue on that I had learned myself. And we're finding that, you know, all of a sudden, yeah, I really don't know. I don't think this thing turned out that great, to trying two different things on the whirlpool. And then all of a sudden, this is the best beer I've ever made.
And how are they using your hops? Are they using them in the whirlpool? Are they using them for dry hopping, I assume? A lot of them in the boil? Yep.
No, not a lot in the boil. So we have Michigan Copper that gets used in the boil. Paradigm is venturing that direction more and more. But our largest utility hop is Michigan Copper. That gets used across the board. I know Mackinac does too. I just don't have a lot of recipes in my head of that one.
Mm-hmm.
Bergamot, Emerald Spire, those stay out of the boil. They're more in the whirlpool and dry hop. And same with Gemini, can work both ways. But yeah, that's the information that I put in every single email, because that's where people, you know, where do we want to use this? Like Emerald Spire doesn't belong anywhere near the heat ever. The delicate oils inside of that thing for white wine, white grape, and dry, you put those to the heat and you burn them off. So yeah.
So, I mean, you are focusing more on aromatic varieties then, right?
We are. And the fun thing this year, in comparison to last year with the market, is we're blending, doing multiple different hops. Last year was a lot of trials, a lot of one-ofs. And now they're doing, I think we have three beers releasing this week that are either Bergamot and Paradigm, or Paradigm and Emerald Spire, which is just... It kind of introduces all the flavors. I think it's a whole lot to deal with when you're drinking through that glass. It's a big punch. But people love it. People love it. I still like the cold, the Pilsner or the lager that we get in with Emerald Spire is by far my favorite beer across the board. But then we have some down in Oklahoma that have been brewing now. This is, I think they're on their fourth or fifth order. And they're brewing full, consistent, marketed beers. And they have one with bergamot that is phenomenal. And I don't know how to pronounce the name of the beer. A Hoffenweizen?
Could be. I don't know. I'm not familiar with it.
I don't know that one.
Well, it's Hefeweizen is a German style.
Hefeweizen. There okay. We go. That is my go-to right now to drink. Thanks, Chris. I can hear you chuckling in the background.
He is laughing at you a little bit there.
But the lager craze has been phenomenal. We actually have 25 to 30 Emerald Spire lagers out there, and all of them are good. If you know how to lager a beer, Emerald Spire will give you that next step of something that you're like, oh my gosh, my beer was good and now it's better.
That's awesome.
And now we have proof of it. We don't have to just say, just try it. We can give you responses and breweries that are doing it. And that is on tap. It's on kegs. It was at a music festival just down the road here the other day. I heard it on the radio.
Cool.
And I'm driving to work and I hear Emerald Spire Lager now at the Electric Festival down in, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
That's
why
great.
Why can't I get the plug in on that? I don't know. But we didn't get plugged in, just the hop did.
Well, Chris, I think you started with a lot of small craft breweries, but now some of the larger brewers are starting to take notice. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, it all began with the breweries right here in Michigan along the lake shore. And I think Scott just really touched on where we're at now is the excitement outside of the state of Michigan is probably even greater than inside of the state of Michigan, which is a unique thing that we're up against, because we find that really the relationships that are adding value to the program are not the largest breweries. We're really looking for breweries that are dedicated to local ingredients and local interactions here in the Midwest. But on a national scale, it's about being willing to be creative and work with the product. Mm-hmm. You know, Scott had made a comment about making a bad brew. And, you know, my prior life before hops was related to restaurants and the culinary industry. And, you know, it took me a while to figure out how to work with sea salt or cumin or chili powder the right way. So if I made a recipe and I used too much sea salt, was it a bad recipe or did I just not know how to use my ingredients exactly the way that I wanted to get the outcome that I was looking for? So that's been the real thing is it's about working with breweries that are willing to invest into giving each hop and multiple hops working together different trials to try different beers. And I love that Scott and Mr. Wizard and the many growers in our network are now seeing that it's about relationships. And so for us, we're investing in not just good product and high quality hops, but we have to invest in people too. So one of those challenges when you talk about larger breweries is the revolving door that occurred over the last 2 years with brewers. So when a farm like Hang'em High Hops creates a relationship with a larger brewery, that relationship is based on the human that's in charge of that brewery. And if he or she moves on to a different brewery, well, now you're back to square one, recreating that relationship. Because right. Often, just like a chef, the brewer is putting their fingerprint on the beers that are coming out of that brewery. So obviously, it's nice to work with larger breweries, but I think that for our small farms, and I try not to speak for any farm, they should be the ones speaking for themselves, but they would rather make 10 200-pound sales than one 500-pound sale. And really, that's to also, we really would love to see many of the breweries invest in having the portfolio available in their cooler, so they're utilizing it in many different ways, not just one big beer that goes into distribution. We do have larger breweries that have really dipped their toes in the water, but obviously none of them for us do we even get to like sit at their tap handles, because at this point we're busy back in Michigan trying to make this happen. But like Scott said, the Pacific Northwest, all throughout the United States, I know he's had beers made in Australia. We've got beers in Abu Dhabi, not a place that. Exactly. So. Excited to try these beers. Scott does a great job when he says buyback program. Mm-hmm. He's buying beer. We do the same. We buy caseloads of beer to be able to share and enjoy. For us, we look at it from a scientific aspect. We're keeping the beers in the fridge and then opening them every 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 2 months, 3 months, and seeing how they hold up, looking at the hops and the beers themselves. Right. You know, that's very important for us. And then in the meantime, we get to drink some great beers made by these breweries. You know, and then I think the last piece is that learning how to work with these ingredients, you know, like Gemini, Emerald Spire, Paradigm, those three hops are so unique to again, and I'm really proud of our growers for recognizing it, is that these hops aren't like anything else. So if you're going to just try to plug and play with a new hop, with a new flavor profile, new oil sets, and just think you're going to get the same results, well, that's madness. So you have to be willing to accept that when you're playing with something new, just like science, you might be inventing something you never thought you'd find. And what is good and what is bad? Well, that's in the beer drinker is the one that decides that, right?
Yeah, obviously. Mm-hmm. Well, just off the top of my head, Chris, do you talk to any of the folks? I know there's some hop growing going on in New York now. Mm-hmm. Are you working with them at all?
Yeah, absolutely. We're really working hard with New York hop growers to try to get them integrated and introduced to what we've done with our hubs and our networks here in Michigan. We've had different hop farms that have played with our first two hops that were released out of our program, which were Mackinac and Michigan Copper.
Okay.
It's a kind of a interesting state to break into, because they're very much so they want their product from New York. So Scott, again, is doing a great job at fostering and creating relationships, not only with New York breweries, but New York farmers. Mm-hmm. We see New York as a great partnership opportunity for Michigan growers to work inside of commodity and the proprietary hops of Great Lakes Hops. So we look at New York and think that there's a lot of great beers being made there. And obviously there's some really good farmers, and that fits with our model that we're seeing the future, which is we want more farms that are farmers, that have more than one crop. That seems to be a profile for success. And obviously apples, cherries, they grow well in New York, just like they do in Michigan. So working with some farms that have the experience in farming, agriculture, and already have been working for years inside of agriculture, they seem to understand more about what they're getting into. Because that's the most important thing, is you can't just look at hop farming and think this is going to be a fun retirement project.
Yeah. Well, New York's kind of interesting because it was a big hop center in the 1800s. And I believe they got blighted out in the late 1800s. But that was a center of hop production in the U.S. So I'm kind of interested in see if it pops up again.
I believe it will. And, you know, the New York being a lot like Michigan is it was built on hardworking people and also people that really do understand our respect and a love for home. So
yeah,
really it is the brewers themselves have said that they really want to buy New York state products. Besides, they also have laws that restrict some growers or some brewers to be able to only use local ingredients. So mm-hmm. That's another reason why we're trying to get more connections and more interactions with our growers in New York.
Sure. Well, Scott, what are some of the challenges you face as you start to ramp up production? You mentioned several of your varieties are sold out for the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's a good, bad problem to have. And I wanted to have a little bit of information on that. So I'm going to let the breweries know that we're in the process now, and it looks like we're about 8 months out. Before this next second, third, and fourth order process comes through. If you're uh-huh. interested in these hops, we're going to be advertising this upcoming month for pre-ordering. I see the market for these hops, and the breweries that we already have are about 14.5% of the market we're covering. We're going to see these things get to a point where we'll have more sold than quantity available. And it is a first come, first serve right now. This year was the first time in 9 years or since I started hop farming that I actually planted already sold product, which was really much, much easier than planting product I wanted to sell. I'll tell you that.
Exactly.
So you're going to see that on all the varieties here in the next 8 to 12 months. We'll have them all pre-sold, and we'll have to be planting and working with other farms in the group to expand for new customers. And I always like to see at least a 20% above market requests or above pre-sales, just so we can keep growing the brewing industry. I don't want to sit at 250 to 500 breweries and just sit there and say, well, we're good. I want to keep growing this to the point where everybody has that chance. And beers change. That's why we do a couple different things. And this year we offered a quantity break. We got into the point where these customers are like, you know, we want to get to using these yearly. And how can we do that? Do you have any price breaks and whatnot? So we presented the whole market with quantity breaks. So we have percentages off due to the poundage and what they see there. It's not a one size fits all. If you call me up and you buy a pound, it's going to be more expensive than if you're buying 132 pounds or 440 or 1500 over the whole year. So we present that information directly up front. We don't say, well, you're a really big brewery, so we're going to give you a better percentage. We offer the small-time brewer who's doing 1 to 5 pound all the way up to the guy who's doing 240 pounds. We offer you the same pricing so you can see it. And it's very open. We don't guard it or hide it at all. And we're consistent across our sales program. So we actually are at, I think we have 13 distributors now. We just picked a new one up in British Columbia, which we're very excited about because it's a pain in the hind end shipping to Canada. And so we're really excited that British Columbia is going to start handling our Canadian customers. And that's phenomenal. We have another supplier out in Wyoming, of all places, who's ecstatic about this. And in the breweries, I think there's maybe 30 breweries or 35 breweries in Wyoming. All of them are interested in brewing. So it's kind of just fun to see this interaction. And we couldn't do this without our distribution groups. We can sell on the internet and we can provide the information. We can do all the advertising I want. But if we have boots on the ground in New York, you know, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Wyoming, Texas, California, almost Florida, and British Columbia, they do a better job interacting with the customer. And it's because the products are good. We don't have to sell the product. We just have to get it in their kettle. And 46% of everybody who puts it in the kettle buys it again. So awesome. That makes us excited. Yeah, very excited about that. So I guess the 3 points of that is we have listened to the customer, and we do have price breaks for quantity. So these are distribution purchasing hops. We're not top dollar. We're not high end. Proprietary only pricing. We have pricing if you want to buy quantity and make this a distro beer, and then working with our distributors to make sure that we're all clear on, you know, getting the customer the best for their business.
So Scott, where can home and pro brewers purchase Michigan grown hops?
Well, we're currently in 47 homebrew stores around the United States. And like I said, we have 13 distributors. So if they're on your site, or if you have a distributor, just ask for, do you carry proprietary or Michigan proprietary hops?
Mm-hmm.
We are on Facebook purchasing now, Instagram. We're not really on the Lupulin exchange because we do have some hops on there for interacting on the Lupulin, but we like to work direct with the customer. So our website, all social media platforms, and then all of the homebrew stores actually do a better job than us selling. They're on Meijer, Etsy, Walmart. They're all over the place.
I mean, can you mention your website? What is your website where you can purchase directly?
Sure. So our website is Hang 'em High Hops, or hanghamhighhop.com. Somebody had talked the other one with the S on the end. And you can go on there. And it's relatively simple. We have a new website here at the end of the year that makes the ordering page much easier. Right now, you go in there. I prefer that all commercial breweries just give me a call. I'm going to give you the best pricing, whatnot. Once we get to the end of the year on fourth quarter, we have our new website releasing, which allows retail sales, commercial sales, direct-to-consumer sales, and you each have your own platform to be able to order in. But right now, that is the easiest way to get about or go about it. Send me an email or call me on the phone. My phone number, I think it's emailed 10,000 times a month. So my phone number is all over the United States. I'm going to pick up, and then we talk beers, and I get you into something that you're gonna like and fits with your customer base. I'm not going to sell you a hop that doesn't fit your customer base or doesn't fit your brewing style, because I'm in for the long haul, not for the one-time brew. Awesome. That's the easiest way to do it. And then once we hit to the end of the year, when you have that website, and I say that because right now it takes 3 minutes and 46 seconds to order 4 hops off my website. I don't know why I know that. It's not okay. But it should take about 1.5 minutes. And so we're working really hard to give especially the distribution or the actual breweries an easy way to go in there and order, because I probably waste too much time a month talking to breweries and they might get sick of it.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we're running out of time, but it gives me an excuse to bring you guys back. Chris, I wanted to get your closing thoughts on the growing Great Lakes region hop production.
You know, right now we're at a very good point, and I was really happy to hear what Scott had to say about the concept being that we're making sales now that are plants that are getting put in the dirt. The hardest thing in the world is to have new growers invest into plant material and cultivar that don't even have a market that's asking for it. But right now we're in a world where we need more contract growers, people that really just want to grow great hops and then work inside of a network and a hub. It's very important that when you think about hop farming, that you understand it's about collaboration, network, patience, and persistence. This isn't something, like I said in the beginning, that is a sprint, it's a marathon. But that long-term goal is about working larger groups together to become small hubs, becoming large hubs, so that we all independently can still run our business the way we see fit, but then also being able to have that reach and that touch with all of those large breweries nationwide. So really, we endorse networking. And when you call us up, we don't try to convince you to be a hop farmer. We actually tell you all the reasons why hop farming is difficult, hard, laborious. And if you still want to have a conversation, then we're going to talk about here's what we need to do. And most of all, it's important to recognize that this is something that takes time. And we hope that we continue to work with great farms like Mr. Wizard, and Hang'em High Hops, and some of these great hop farms that have really helped to organically grow this product with us as far as the GLH proprietary hop lineup.
And Scott, your closing perspective as a hop farmer?
My closing perspective is just I appreciate the breweries that have worked with us this last 18 months right out of COVID. I can't thank you enough. This is what I want to do for a living. I still need you guys to interact with us and would love to do some more beer trials and love to get in these consistent beers. So please, you see my emails come through. You see my phone calls come through. I'm just a guy sitting in a pole barn selling hops and working as hard as he can to get you a great product. So feel free. I usually give you something at the end of the day for free. So just give me a call. We'll get something brewing and see if it's a good fit.
Awesome. Well, my guests today were Scott Mast and Chris Vogel. Scott is a Michigan-based hop farmer, owner of Hang'em High Hops, and Chris is an employee with Great Lake Hops, specializing in proprietary hop varieties. Scott, thank you again for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And Chris, pleasure to have you on as well. Thanks for joining me again.
Yeah, thank you for including me in this.
A big thank you to Scott Mast and Chris Vogel for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They offer access to videos, brewing courses, exclusive articles, and the amazing Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. Go to beerandbrewing.com to get your subscription today. And also the Brew Commander, the new brewhouse controller from Blickman Engineering. It's available in electric and gas propane models. The patent-pending Brew Commander is a high-quality brewhouse controller that offers automated step mashing, boil timers, precision temperature control, and advanced settings. Command your brew day with a new Brew Commander. To get yours today, visit BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And the web-based version of Beersmith with a new inventory module is available now at BeersmithRecipes.com. Beersmith for the Web lets you build, edit, and brew recipes from any browser, including your desktop, your tablet, or your phone. You can try Beersmith Web for 30 days by setting up an account at BeersmithRecipes.com. If you purchase a Gold, Platinum, or Pro license, you get both Beersmith Web and the desktop version of Beersmith for one low price. Check out BeersmithRecipes.com now to give Beersmith Web a try. I'd like to thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great brewing week.